Good afternoon. We'd like to open the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness. Speaking of which, it's timely. We are looking at what's soon to be a snowpocalypse outside that window. And with respect to that, we will be moving our scheduled work sessions to Tuesday. So if you're here to testify on a particular amendment perhaps you were anticipating, or you want to see what was going to happen in terms of action in this committee on the work session, just please realize we will be moving that to Tuesday. So it will be appearing on that agenda. So today is Thursday, February 6, 2014. And I do expect maybe one or two more committee members, but some of the legislators have had to get on the road, and as you know, there are some blizzard warnings occurring. With respect to that, I also understand that many of you have to get home safely as well. So we will get moving and try to get through this swiftly, and we appreciate you being here. We will first open up a public hearing on House Bill 4057. Representative Wisnett, if you'd like to take the dais, please. And Ms. Ross, what are we doing today?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4057 requires certain entities to report to the appropriate legislative committees by October 1st, 2014 on applications of military training or experience toward licensure, certification, or other authorization to engage in a profession, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal, and the members, I think, are familiar with this from the representative's previous appearance.
He was telling us it's going to be a $500,000. A little humor this afternoon. Good afternoon, Chair Matthews and Vice Chair Fagan and Mrs. Ross. I'm, for the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53, and this looks like a normal winter day in Sun River, Oregon. But hope everyone does get home safely and that Chair Matthews is not out working or this afternoon or this weekend. Mr. Chair, thank you for hearing House Bill 4057. I hope the chair and the committee will pass it and move it on to the floor, and I understand the delay in the work session. I briefly explained to the committee in January during your interim meeting that I introduced a bill. It was modeled after Maryland's Veterans Full Employment Act, and we have good people in Legislative Council, and Mrs. Spikely came and told me that we passed this already in the 2012 and 2013 asking for this. And she and I talked about it, and I said, well, how are we doing? So, and I said, so let's change the bill and find out how we're doing. We've asked the agencies to do this, and how are they doing? Because families, military families coming back into private life, 1 or 2 years of not having a job is really difficult for them and is not fair to those veterans who are serving our country in uniform. So we drafted a good bill, and it just basically takes those agencies. It's a long bill, but it goes back and takes the agencies that were impacted by those two bills and says report back on how we're doing. At issuing, of course, we're talking about issuing license to veterans and to their spouses, a license everywhere from truck drivers to teachers. That the state of Oregon issues. So we redrafted the bill. I'm glad to have a lot of sponsors, including members of this committee, on the bill. And I think it's the right thing to do, and I hope that the committee agrees. You're going to hear testimony today from the Veteran Affairs Director, Mr. Smith, Director Smith. And I think also I understand that we could be some concern about what's happening in some of the licensing people. But, you know, either way, let's find out what the success is, what we can do better to help them if we need further legislation. So that's basically any questions from the chair and the vice chair.
Thanks for your testimony, and I appreciate what you're trying to do here. And we did pass this, and I think some of the problems are determining what is substantially equivalent. And I think the other problem that people run into, and so I'm glad to be on the bill, and thanks for the opportunity to sign on, is trying to let the agency kind of determine, like, what is going to be their best practice to determine what is substantially similar for each of those different, you know, military occupations that transfer into the civilian world. I think our intentions are good. I think that, I know that you're trying to work with the agencies and trying to give them time to compile the numbers, and so hopefully we can get there. It is my intent to do so. Vice Chair Fagan, did you have any questions for the good representative?
don't have any questions, but I am very supportive because from our conversations privately, I know that the intent was to find out just what has been done, kind of give us an update, and particularly if there are problems, as we've heard in the interim committee, on certain terminology, the first thing we can do to move toward fixing those problems is to know what where we're at now. And that's why I understand the intent of the bill is to find out where we're at, what's working, what's not working, what's not working, let's fix it. To the extent that that requires language changes, let's do that. To the extent that it requires different practices, then let's look at those. But obviously putting our military families back to work has to be a number one priority.
You know, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, I agree. That's, you know, we passed the bill, but so what? That doesn't accomplish anything if we're not getting what we need to. And the agencies are having problems and they need to come back to us and see if we need to change legislation to help them clarify what's equivalent. And there are other states doing this now. As I said, Maryland passed a full employment that talked about all these things. It was really supported by the White House. Mrs. Obama came out for the signing and things like that. So I think it's very important. And, you know, we're hoping that troops will draw down soon in all these combat areas. But when they come back, if they don't get a job, we're going to have a lot of social issues to, and a lot of money. So let's get them to work. That's the best thing we can do for them. And that's what they want, I think.
Absolutely. Any other questions?
No, thank you.
Seeing none, to the Honorable Representative, thank you so much for your service to this great nation, but also to your constituents. You do an amazing job. It's always fun to work with you on different bills, and thank you so much for being here today and your testimony today.
Thank you, and be safe.
Absolutely, sir. And with that, we will call up Cameron Smith and Eric Gablix, please. Gentlemen? We don't get to see you much in this committee, sir. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You we see all the time.
Good afternoon, Chair Matthews, Vice Chair Fagan, Committee Administrator Ross. For the record, my name is Cameron Smith, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And also want to thank the good representative who has now left the room for his service, 27 years, full bird colonel in the Air Force, and very supportive of our veterans and military. And as he mentioned, the legislature did pass House Bill 4063 in 2012 regarding licensing boards accepting military education, skills, and training. As you know, and as our veterans and military community know, translating what are very real skills, leadership, core values into civilian occupations is a transition when they leave the service, whether after 4 years or 20. House Bill 4063 passed unanimously in the Senate. All but two voted for it in the House, carried by Representative Parrish and Senator Olson to the floor. And the intent is pure. The intent is excellent. How do we translate these skills? But I think a very challenging one, given both the structure, you know, like Washington State has almost, I think, all of its licensing boards under one agency that kind of flows through one chain of command. Here, with more of the board and commission structure in Oregon, it gets very challenging when you have very isolated professions that have their core competencies for their profession. How do you translate? So it's very, a very large number of entities involved in a diverse array of professions, and then always having the military training changing as well. So it fits for some and not as many for others. So I think the intent is good to have a check-in with folks. And then I reached out automatically to our good friend. I joke with Director Gablix whenever he opposes some veterans initiative. Why do you hate veterans, Director? But
really?
Truly, we held our executive staff strategy retreat out at their fine public safety campus and the Public Safety Academy. And they, as a community of law enforcement, firefighters and law enforcement professionals. Many of their members are veterans. You have a piece of the 9/11 memorial out there. And just the culture of military and veterans infuses their organization. So they get it from the core value side and also have some experience with that training side. So just wanted to bring him here as a touch point, beginning that conversation of how agencies are doing on the check-in.
Thank you for that, and thanks for your continued service to the veterans and your service to the nation's military. Eric, great to see you.
Same here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, how's things at DPSST?
We're doing well.
Excellent. Well, you know, I know you don't hate veterans. I know you're a big fan, and you have many of them in your ranks, And so I'd like to hear from you today. So for the record, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Eric Skablix, Director of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, also known as DPSST. I have to start by saying I'm a little worried about the record being transcribed to this meeting and having this now accessible on the Internet. So I think our testimony will clarify that we are very supportive of what questions as am I. For those of you not aware, the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training serves over 35,000 public safety constituents in the state of Oregon. Those are your city, county, state, tribal law enforcement officers, your corrections officers, parole and probation, firefighters, 911 operators, and private security professionals. Many of those, if not thousands of those, are veterans. Mr. Chair, I know you have a commendable service in the military and in public safety, as does Rod Beach, who's here with the state police providing security today, and he's a retired Marine. Those are two examples of people that have had great careers in the military and came into public safety. What DPSST does, and already has done before the legislative efforts, which we commend you for, to recognize veterans in their service, we already give equivalency for equal experience in the military. The challenge that we have is the translation of that service into public sector careers. An easy example that I spoke with Cameron about this morning is a firefighter in the United States Air Force. Their military profession is a firefighter. They're trained to national standards, just like the firefighters at Portland International Airport. When those people leave the military, they easily receive state certifications, no questions asked, everything is done. It's not as easy if you're in the Navy and you're on a ship, because on a ship, if there's a fire, everybody's a firefighter. But they're not the same type of firefighters as the Portland Fire Bureau has that responds on ocean-going ship fires. So we have to translate that on a case-by-case basis through our process. We already do that. The challenge that I think we have is, how do we report that out to a committee that's looking at our work? So operationally, it's a day-to-day function for us. As we have veterans come into public safety, we do give them credit where credit is due. If we cannot give them certification, and I'll use law enforcement, for example, military police officers are working under a different set of rules and standards than a local police officer is. So while we may not be able to grant them equal credit for attending our basic police class, we do give them credit for their military training when they receive certification. So it helps them toward their upper levels of certification. So we count the training, we count the experience, but we just can't give them a license straight across because they're not working under the Oregon Revised Statutes and Oregon Use of Force Statutes. They're working under a different set of federal regulations. So, again, case by case, but we have been doing this for years. We testified on 4063 in 2012, and we just wanted to come and tell you how we operate in this fashion and how we support veterans across the state.
And thank you for that, Erickson. You have always, as an agency, been very supportive of veterans. I appreciate that and the service you provide. I think Ms. Fink does an amazing job for firefighters and all of our records there, too, and as do all your folks. You know, we ran into this also in 2009, trying to come in to do something that I thought was going to be fairly simple with EMTs, looking at combat medic that's substantially similar to an EMT intermediate at the time, and yet also recognizing that you could be, and perhaps the MOS has changed, but a 95 Bravo, which was my MOS at the time, police, and yet you could be at a static security point and have never had any kind of confrontation or any kind of, you know, training other than what you received in your initial advanced training. So it's not easy, and we understand that, and yet we're asking still for, you know, at least some semblance of a report so that folks can come forward to say we're recognizing that.
Right.
And yet I get, too, that it's somewhat of a moving target as legislators come and go, and we change from year to year. But all in all, I appreciate the work you're doing, and I know that you realize how important it is. And like you said, you did it before we ever asked for it, and thank you. Do you have anything that you'd like to ask the panel? Representative Witt.
I'm good, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Speak for me. Good to hear. Thank you, sir. And with that, gentlemen, thank you very much. Really appreciate that. And we won't be moving the bill today. We don't have the amount of committee folks on the bill, and we'll just take a little time and see what others have to say. Others haven't really weighed in on this, but seems fairly straightforward and fairly simple. Wonderful. So we will great. So what we'll do is we will close the public hearing on House Bill 4057, and we will open. You want to go here next, or
take these two?
I'm thinking he might want to kick it off. So why don't we go, we're going to, oh, here he is right here. See, the world does stop for you, Representative. So we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 4091. Jameson does amazing work. Welcome, Representative, and Ms. Ross, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4091 permits private, non-public employers to prefer veterans and their spouses when hiring or promoting employees as specified in the bill. We received a dash one just today, and it was made available, and I believe there are copies at the dais, but it is on OLS. I just haven't had an opportunity to summarize it.
Thank you. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Matthews, distinguished colleagues of the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Services, thank you for your time and consideration of House Bill 4091-1 today. My name is Representative Jim Widener, and I represent House District 24, which includes both Yamhill and Washington County. I know that many of you are in agreement that we simply cannot thank our veterans and their families enough for their service. I also know that many nationwide and statewide companies, alongside small businesses, wish to find additional ways to thank veterans by creating more employment opportunities. In fact, at least 86 of the nationwide companies have already made requests in other states to seek clarification that asserting preferential treatment for hiring honorably discharged veterans is a legal practice, not subject to unlawful employment practice lawsuits. Currently, we do know that government employees who take the civil service exam receive additional points that increases their chances of employment if they have been honorably discharged from our military. Unfortunately, private businesses are more fearful of expensive litigation and requested that additional statute be drafted to protect their preferential hiring of veterans, similar to those preferential hiring practices already in place for civil service exam positions. I would like to briefly list some of the companies in Oregon who have already begun actions to adopt preferential hiring for Oregon veterans. 7-Eleven, Ameriprise Financial, AT&T, Avis, Budget Group, Brinks Home Security, Caterpillar, Century 21 Real Estate, Charles Schwab Tire, Cisco Systems, Coca-Cola, Comcast, DirecTV, Intel Corporation, JCPenney's, Office Depot, Starbucks, Target, Goodyear Tire, Kroger's, Toys R Us, Verizon Communication, Waste Management, WellPoint, and Walmart. In fact, I would like to quickly highlight that Walmart has pledged to hire every returned veteran that wants a job. That's a guaranteed job with flexibility to allow them to take advantage of their GI Bill and educational opportunities. This bill is simple. We just want additional language in statute to protect these companies and encourage more to follow through with their commitment to our veterans. We hope that by establishing some degree of protective language against unlawful hiring lawsuits, we can bolster additional companies and small businesses to draft similar mission statements to hire Oregon vets. It should be noted that often the structure and sense of belonging to a healthy work environment has helped many returning veterans transition back into civilian life. I would also like to address that because these companies recognize that spouses serve alongside their enlisted loved ones, that this employment opportunity protection is awarded to those whose spouse has been killed in action due to their service. Again, we can never truly repay our veterans, but we can help them find a job. Thank you for your time and consideration of House Bill 4091-1, and we look forward to continuing this conversation and possible work this session. So, I am open to any questions. This is something that actually hits me personally, and because I do have a son who just left the military who was looking to do something where he could actually use his GI Bill for work, ended up getting a job where he's not going to be able to take opportunity to advance his educational opportunities with the position he took, but this would have opened him to look at other companies where he could have worked part-time and used his GI Bill and continued his educational practice. So, but this job isn't that bad of a job because he makes quite a bit of money at it. So,
thank you, Representative. Questions for Representative Widener?
I have a question. So this is certainly a practice that I like to see. You mentioned a bunch of companies who are already doing this. Have any of them faced lawsuits?
To my knowledge, I don't believe any of them have, but I think there might be somebody in the back who would have a better idea of that. I know we worked on one of the amendment came about from communication with AOI as one of the things they were looking for. I don't know if JL's willing to come forward and...
We can bring JL forward if you don't mind. JL Wilson, if you'd like to join the representative.
So I don't, just to answer Fagan's questions, I don't think this is happening in Oregon, but I think it is starting to happen in other states. And so this is a little bit preemptive, I think, for us, just to acknowledge that that's somehow happening here. So that's where the...
I guess the nature of my question is just because I, in my other profession, I am an employment attorney, and I'm just not aware of the basis of a lawsuit. Because if I was applying for a job against, let's say, Representative Matthews, and they said, we're going to hire him because he's a veteran and we like that, I don't think I have a cause of action. Unless they said, we want to hire him because he's a man, or because he's, I guess I don't understand where, what would be the basis for a cause of action without this statute? Why could a company be sued because they're giving a preference to veterans, unless they're violating some other law? Is that what you're asking?
Do you want this to preempt?
So if they don't want to hire someone because they're a woman, as long as they hire a veteran, they can't ever be sued for not hiring a woman? Is that?
Well,
hi, JL. How are you?
JL Wilson with Associated Oregon Industries. And just for the record, we're supporting the bill.
Right.
And the reason we asked for the dash ones was we got pretty significant feedback that people would be unlikely to actually utilize that policy in the absence of a declaration that they would be precluded from a 659A discrimination lawsuit as a result of exercising their new statutory right for preferential treatment of veterans. Because by definition, by preferentially treating a veteran, you will be precluding someone else from gaining employment, and that falls under the terms and conditions of employment for someone who may be a protected class. And when you look at the breadth of protected classes, they just, let me just say, they're better safe than sorry, and they wanted to be assured that because if they exercise their ability to utilize that preference, that they wouldn't be sued on the back end for discrimination because someone else was passed over on the basis of, or the claim would be made on the basis of sex, religion, sexual orientation, those types of things, the protected classes.
So, dealing with protected class, if you don't mind, Representative?
Please.
I don't want to interrupt your train of thought, but veterans are currently in a protected class. Are they in this instance as well? Aren't they a protected class already?
They may be, but you're base, by definition, because you're elevating a veteran in the terms and conditions of employment, you are, by definition, probably excluding someone else who might also have that same... who might also fall under a protected class.
So I guess my question would be, if veterans are currently a protected class and they were passed over for somebody else who's in a protected class, they still wouldn't have a cause of action, would they?
Well, they could certainly make the claim and it would be adjudicated. And I think that that's what we're trying to preclude is, I think what we're trying to do with the Dash Ones is make it the easiest possible route to implement this bill with no legal hiccups for the company that decides that they want to exercise this statutory preference.
Okay, and I appreciate you joining the discussion because this committee is very favorable to veterans. We recognize the service of our men and women, and of course one of those being your son. So we want to make sure we do the right thing. I'm still having just a little bit of a difficulty grasping why it's necessary, and I guess for me, you listed a whole host of people out there that are doing this in your testimony. Any of them have any pending lawsuits against them or any litigation currently? I mean, it said that was a long list. That was impressive.
At this point, I don't know if any of them that do have some, but also my pocket's been vibrating a lot too, so that might be the sign that there may
Let's
be
hope
some.
That's what it is.
I mean, the biggest... I think the biggest thing that companies were after is just some clarification, because they don't want to end up in a situation where this could occur. So they want to be preemptive, get ahead of this, and I don't blame them for wanting to do that. I think after having a son who's been in combat, who's dealt with PTSD, I saw what it was like when he's not working and when he is working. And the best thing for him when he got back here was having a job and getting back to work, because when they sit at home and their minds are wandering, that's when things get a little crazy for them. But when they're able to get up every day and go to work, we don't see the effects of the PTSD, and we don't have the dramatic scenarios. We've had lots of youth that have served overseas in my own district that have had some very serious issues when they've been out of work and everything, but when they were working, they were fine. Then all of a sudden, for some reason, they were laid off and had that month, 2 months at home where they're just kind of going, then they start hitting the bottle, drinking different things, and they just snap like that, and they go out and run into police cars, and there's high-speed chases. I mean, this is what's went on in my own district, and I don't know about other people's districts, but the best thing for a returning vet is getting them back into society and working as quickly as possible. These are companies that are willing to do it. I want to make sure that nobody can take action against them for taking these steps to put our returning soldiers back to work.
Right. I understand. And just so that we're clear, you made a reference to the GI Bill and your son's desire to go back to education. Nothing in this bill addresses that. Your assumption would be that if somebody were veteran friendly, they would work with them.
Right. Well, okay. Walmart has pledged to do that. That's why that statement I brought up was under Walmart. They would put people to work part time, so then they could go to school full time, or however they wanted to work with it and work with them on it. So they were the ones that are kind of in the forefront to this as well.
I am all in favor of finding a way for living wage jobs for veterans to work full time, feed their families, and get back reintegrated. We'll see where we go. Yes, Representative.
Thank you, first of all, for sharing the personal nature of just some of the struggles that you've heard about in your district and your family, and that's certainly why, as Representative Matthews already mentioned, that there are laws on the books saying an employer cannot discriminate based on all the things that you just said, which makes them a protected class, so they can't otherwise been planning to hire that person and then say, oh man, they're a veteran, I don't want to deal with these issues. So that's why that protection is there, which I 100% support. If that wasn't the current law, I would absolutely support making that the law. This is just, I definitely support the intent behind this bill. I'm just not aware. Are you Googling? Have you been able to find any companies that have been sued for giving preference to a veteran?
No, I wasn't looking for that. No, I just know that there have been, I don't know that there have been actual lawsuits other places. There have been threats of other lawsuits, which is why big companies like Home Depot and others are looking at this type of legislation in multiple states, because they have these policies of we want to employ folks and get them back to work. And so there are groups out there, some of these big, you know, big box retailers or large national companies who are like, let's just make sure we clarify laws and preempt those things, because it is, anybody can sue anybody for anything, right?
Right.
Show up in court.
Mm-hmm.
I've experienced that with a large company who wanted my trademark one time. So and they can just take you to court for any reason. So I think the goal and the intent is that they actually, want to strengthen the right to have veterans be at the top of their priority list for hiring. And so there's a company in Aurora, for example, that is their full mission is we will hire veterans first always. 40% of their workforce is veteran hired. And so while they are not specifically asking for this bill, their goal is that they, that is our mission. We will hire veterans first. We want those folks. We want to employ them. We want that skill set and training. And I think that just the notion that maybe somebody could come up and say, well, you didn't hire me, and throw them in a lawsuit for small business, that would be a, take the big companies aside for small business, I think that would be a devastating thing. So, anyway, that's just, I think it's other states are starting to experience this. Whether there's actually a suit filed somewhere, I don't know.
And I think the nice thing, I mean, again, coming at it from a business attorney, is that the positive thing, because these companies, as Representative Parrish just mentioned, when you're out there, I mean, the whole idea behind a discrimination lawsuit, taking veterans out of the picture, if I was in a wheelchair and I went to be hired at Walmart and they wouldn't hire me, and I had reason to believe it was because I was disabled, I have a claim, obviously, under 659A. I also have a claim under Title VII and under the federal law. The idea is that I still have to prove it was because I'm disabled. So then the positive thing of these companies that have this big, they have a much stronger, they already, just by virtue of putting that out there, because if I'm their lawyer and somebody comes up and says, oh, you didn't hire me because I was in a wheelchair, and they say, no, we have a policy that we always hire veterans, and here's our evidence showing that for the same job you applied for, a veteran, just the fact of having that policy is an incredible defense, because it shows that the company wasn't hiring someone for a particular reason. It shows they weren't hiring them because they have a policy of hiring veterans.
Chair Matthews, I think the other thing is, you know, in public sector work, there are preference points for veterans, and that is not similar in the private sector. So if you file for a job, and a federal job or I think state jobs even, that there are preference points for consideration for veterans, but that extension of being able to use a system of preference points is not commonplace in the public, or excuse me, in the private sector. And so this is kind of like that, in that people want to be able to say, well, it might not be a point structure, using that same kind of logic of, you know, we automatically give you more weight for consideration. I mean, we do that right now in government, of preference points.
But I think the private sector does do. I mean, private sector can. I mean, the basics of employment law in Oregon is that you can hire or not hire anyone for any reason, as long as it's not an illegal reason. So they can. If I was a company, I wanted to create a system of preference points, I can give preference to veterans. I simply can't hire someone because they're in a protected class. That means there are people in protected classes I can certainly not hire, as long as it's not because they're in a protected class. So I guess I'm just having a hard time finding why this is a necessary change, because it feels like it would kind of dismantle. Because if somebody did go apply for a job, and let's say they were pregnant or they were in a wheelchair, and let's say that they had good evidence to show that company just did not want to install a ramp and didn't want to deal with anyone in a wheelchair, and someone who was a veteran also happened to apply, the person who genuinely believed they were being discriminated against suddenly doesn't have a lawsuit, because this law is like a shield to anybody as long as they hired a veteran. I don't know that that's what you're intending to do, but that sounds to me like an unintended consequence, is anyone who legitimately was discriminated against in hiring suddenly would not have a claim because the company had hired a veteran.
So you brought us a one-page, half-page bill, and perhaps we are overcomplicating it. We don't certainly intend to. I think this committee, as you know, having served, sometimes we're like veterans' preference points as an example in the civil service world.
Which I was on the committee when we moved that.
So you know how problematic that can be in terms of at what point do they award those points. And furthermore, the most recent piece of legislation, which is interviewing veterans and providing the interview for a veteran, they are struggling with that as well. At what point do you provide the interview to the veteran, or do you disqualify the veteran? My concern, not my only concern, but one of my concerns is, first of all, not doing the right thing. I want to do the right thing from this chair and from this committee and from this body. I really do. And if that means that helps the veterans get employment, that's great. But it's not popular to talk about, but there are some veterans that don't reintegrate well. They have had some substantial problems out there. I'm not going to say that makes them unemployable, but I would suggest perhaps that having a law that says we always hire veterans when you don't, I mean, JL, what's your take on that? And I certainly don't mean to throw you under the bus on this, but I guess for me, I'm thinking, if you say you're going to hire veterans, you pretty much kind of got to hire every veteran. Because the minute you pass over the one, all of a sudden now you are targeted out there as the company that hires everybody but that veteran, but this particular veteran. And I would think that's dangerous territory. Not intended, but there's a lot of unintended consequences that come out of this body. What's your take on that?
That's true, Representative Matthews, but that's just people being people. I mean, we're just imperfect, and we apply things imperfectly. I think my position on this bill is, of course, I support the bill, and when it came up, I flagged it that it's something we needed to look at and support. But I'm in a little different place than Representative Widener. I mean, he's advocating the policy, and we support the policy. But what I'm adding to that is, okay, if you're going to do the policy, yeah, I would recommend you adopt the Dash 1 and go the whole distance with the policy, because in the absence of the Dash 1, you're only taking out, you're still leaving it to chance, and you're still going to have an employment community out there that says, oh, I know it's on the books, but I just don't feel good about it, because I know I could get a 659A discrimination suit on the back end. So that's what I'm saying. I'm saying if we're going to do the policy. And that's why I recommended the Dash 1s.
Okay. Well, we certainly have some, we have somebody else to hear from too, but Representative Widener, did you have anything else you'd like to add to the?
I mean, we might be overcomplicating it, and we may not, Chair Matthews. So, but the biggest concern for me is we have companies out here that we need to make sure we protect, because they're wanting to do the right thing. They're wanting to help returning vets get back on their feet, because we have a huge unemployment problem with our returning veterans. And as a son of a father who has a combat veteran son, I know what he went through when he came back. I've seen PTSD at different levels. I know what it's like to watch him have the nightmares at nights and everything else. I mean, you've heard the floor speech, and I've taken stances against my own party on some different issues because I know we need to do things to make a difference to help these guys, to get them reintegrated back into society. I know this committee knows that as well. So every little thing we can do, and if we can give protection to businesses that are wanting to do the right thing as well, I'm here to help those businesses get that protection. And that's the whole reason when I saw this, I didn't have to take this bill, didn't have to do anything with it, but I knew it was the right thing to do. And that's why I've attacked it so hard and come to you as many times as I have, been over backwards to get the amendment done for AOI and to make sure this is done right, and I want it done right and when it comes out of this committee. So, and that's my reason for moving this.
For presenting this. I appreciate that, sir. Thank you. Thank you. Joel Fisher, if we could please have come forward.
Chair Matthews, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher, here on behalf of the Oregon Business Association. Would like to thank you for directing all the hardball questions to JL. just here to basically echo what they've said. Oregon Business Association supports this bill and agree with support the Dash 1s. If we're going to do it, let's go all the way. You've brought up some really good points, but we still have members who feel like we should have this added bit of extra protection. So we support the bill and support the Dash 1s.
So do you mind me asking, was this something you brought forward, or is this something you were asked to support?
Something we were asked to support by our members.
Were your members the one that came forward?
Yeah, our members.
So they identified the need and contacted the representative?
Correct. Sorry. Oh. Our members just asked me, OBA, to come testify in it. But as far as I know, our members did not bring the bill forward. Was that your question?
Yeah. I appreciate knowing there's so many champions out there that are there for veterans' issues, because we usually sit in this committee with about the same three people. So it's nice to have folks out there thinking about how we can better serve our veterans and to see such a need and experience that. So please thank your members, and JL, you as well. I appreciate what the industries and what the businesses are trying to do, and I really appreciate what Representative Widener is trying to do. I am trying to make sure that we don't misstep. When we say we're trying to do the right thing, my fear is by doing the right thing, we might potentially actually do the wrong thing, and we would fail somebody else out there that wouldn't have access to litigation in a real-world experience, and we want to be careful of that as well. And I will go over the top for veterans all day long, and I think this committee has a history of that long before I came and long after I'm gone. So appreciate your testimony today. Yes, question?
Just a comment also. I just wanted to thank you also, and just, you know, to AOI as well and OBA, because I know that you do a lot of education for your members as well. And I'm not in control of the decision what happens with this bill or doesn't, but just to let them know, as far as I am aware, and I do this kind of work for a living, there is no cause of action unless somebody was discriminated for a reason that's illegal, if a company wants to give preferential treatment to veterans, and I hope every company in Oregon would have a plan to do so, encourage your members to do so, even as law, existing law, there's no cause of action because somebody gave preferential treatment to veterans. So that is current law as far as I understand it. And so, you know, certainly to the extent that you do education with your members, encourage them to develop those policies because there's, you know, there's no more important population in Oregon than we need to get back to work than our veterans.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've learned a lot in this already pretty short committee. you got some difficult decisions to make, and I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Joel. We really do struggle, I think we all do, trying to find out, you know, what is going to be the best practice. And I know we have caused a great deal of strain on some of the local governments, trying to you know, increase the ability for a veteran to get an interview, trying to give them the opportunity with preference points to recognize that, you know, similar experience of military, you know, and account for that versus the education somebody else may have had. And it's not easy. Most of the bills that do come out of committee end up sailing through the floor, but that doesn't mean they're not vetted here. And let's face it, the other thing that we all know, it's not popular to be against a piece of veterans legislation. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to testify that this is a bad idea when it's put forward in the best interest for our veterans. Nobody wants to be in that position, and particularly the chair. And so I can appreciate what everybody's trying to do. We are, even though it's a very short session, we're committed to trying to find a way to put the best foot forward. So thanks for that. And Jameson, thanks for your work. And please thank the good representative again for coming down to the committee. We appreciate that. And JL, thank you, sir. Thank you. Seeing nobody else signed up to testify on House Bill 4091, we will close the public hearing and open up the public hearing on House Bill 4025. Ms. Ross.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4025 clarifies that the maximum amount of home loans or farm loans made by the Department of Veterans Affairs to eligible individuals applies to each of four possible loans, declares an emergency effective on passage. This measure has no revenue and no fiscal, and the members will recall this is came out of hearings in 2013 on Senate Bill 34 when ODVA was seeking to increase the number of loans it could provide to eligible veterans from 2 to 4. They saw this ambiguity and came back and wanted clarifications, and that's all the measure does.
Great, thank you. And I see we have Ms. Gilman, please, and Mr. Smith.
Good afternoon again, Chair Matthews, Vice Chairs Parrish and Fagan, and Representative Witt. For the record, my name is Cameron Smith, the Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I will be brief in my testimony before handing over to Ms. Gilman. But as you know, the OrVet Home Loan Program, one of the original programs that founded ODVA back after World War II, and over $7.5 billion lent in home and farm loans since our founding as an agency, low-interest loans as a benefit to our veterans and their families and getting them a piece of the American dream after their service. And it's also, as you know, a critical funding tool through the other funds channel to fund some of our other programs and our good partnerships between the county and the state on veteran services. But want to introduce Ms. Lori Skillman, who we were fortunate to steal away from the Real Estate Commission and Board. She is our senior policy advisor and has been working between our loan program and DOJ on this issue, so I want to let her speak to the specific bill.
Great. Hello there.
Hi. Chair Matthews, Vice Chair Fagan, Vice Chair Parrish, and Representative Witt. For the record, my name is Laurie Skillman. I'm a senior policy advisor at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. The purpose of this bill is to just, as your committee administrator, Ms. Ross, so clearly said, is just to provide some clarity and certainty to veterans and to the department regarding the statutory loan limitations for home loans through our home loan program. As the director stated, we provide home loans to eligible veterans. The statutory limitation is a dollar amount that's tied to Fannie Mae, which is currently $417,000. However, the current statute is ambiguous as to whether that $417,000 is a per loan amount or an aggregate amount of the number of loans for all loans that a veteran can have during their lifetime. Last year, Senate Bill 34 came through this committee, and the bill increased the number of loans that a veteran may have over the veteran's lifetime from 2 to 4 loans. Testimony also stated that the eligible veterans would be able to borrow up to this maximum amount of $417,000 for each loan, in contrast to an aggregate amount. So we're just asking for some clarity and certainty on that, and so that it's real clear that that statutory limitation on the dollar amount applies to each loan. And as you know, veterans can only get loans from our department for single-family residences, for their personal residence, not for any others. So they can only, because of that, they can only have one loan at one time. So that 4 loan limitations is over the lifetime of the veteran. Thank you so much. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. And, of course, this testimony comes on the heels of a recent interim committee where that specific loan amount was discussed and clarified. And so I think it's a fairly simple ask. I think we would even be able to move it today had I not told other committee members that we didn't intend to move bills to get them on the road so they could get safely home. So I don't think there's any real clarifying questions on my end anyway. Any committee members want to speak to this? Any questions? So let me ask you this in the world of just homes in particular. There's a program called Good Neighbor Program. Have you heard of that? Homes are sold at a reduced price. They target specific neighborhoods, trying to get police, firefighters, teachers, maybe even nurses are included in that. Anyway, the specifics are you can purchase a home. It's at a reduced amount, roughly about 60% of value. And the agreement is that you have to live in the home for 3 years. I'm just curious if there wouldn't be any way to explore that program and see if we couldn't say that veterans would also be good neighbors and try. The goal of the program is to boost the area. And I just thought with your background, which is just a perfect fit for what we're trying to get done in terms of affordable housing and you know, reintegration, that maybe you've heard of the program, had some experience with it, or it might be something we could explore. But I'll try to find some more facts on that too, Cameron, just so that we can kind of look into that. But again, it's a unique situation, but folks that have experienced it, with some young firefighters, have taken advantage of this program. You have to reside as a primary residence in your home for 3 years, and after that, you can keep it as a rental, you can sell it on the market, you can do what you want. And it's all an effort to clean up neighborhoods and to get, again, good neighbors back into neighborhoods. So
Chair Matthews, members of the committee, I'm not familiar with the program, but it sounds like a good fit, similarly as another option beyond our program. Similarly to the VA federal loan is another option. So kind of an all-hands-on-deck approach for veterans and getting them and their families into housing. So we'll definitely look into it and report back as well how it might fit with our other benefits.
Yeah, if it's just a matter of trying to go before a board or somebody to say, would you include us in the conversation? Maybe we can do that together. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any further questions or comments from the panel? Thank you so much, and safe travels. Thank you.
Thanks.
With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 4025. And I believe
you have already carried these over.
We have carried over, yes. So we'll be carrying over House Bill 4021, House Bill 4022, House Bill 4023, House Bill 4087.
And the others you'll repost.
We will be, doing a lot of fact-checking and searching on the bill we heard previously. It does sound like a great idea. I want to make sure, again, we're taking the right steps. With that, I will encourage everybody to pay attention to the weather. Don't make yourself part of the problem. Be part of the solution. Prepare. Please prepare. Plan ahead. Go shopping while you can. Store up and stock up, and stay off the roads if you absolutely can. Our emergency responders need roads clear, and please do have safe travels. Anybody else have anything else for the good of the order?
What a public service announcement. That is awesome.
Well, I'm telling you, I happen to know what's going on in Gresham. We are planning for the worst scenario that we could ever face, 5 to 7 inches with freezing rain on top of that and 60-mile-per-hour winds in the west part of the gorge. We will have firefighters, police, emergency responders, and perhaps the National Guard, as we have before, that came to the rescue. So just everybody, please be safe, be careful, and pack some gloves and some boots and bottled water and things in your car too, because you may be in that 20-car pileup with no intent to be there. Please drive safely and have a great day. And thanks for joining us.
Full charge on your cell phone.
Anything else we want? You're in emergency preparedness now, folks. We're going to wing it just a little bit. But take a banana, too. Potassium's good. All right. With that being said, Matthew, thank you. And Ms. Ross, thank you. And we are adjourned.
Thanks, sir.